You're listening to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com for the week of February 19th, 2005. My name is Rob Greenlee, and thank you for downloading us and streaming us or even podcasting us from around the world. We keep you plugged into the latest net trends and even some Wi-Fi maps this week.
Hey, everyone. This is Dana sitting over here, and I've had to actually scoot over and make room for the famous Peter York, who's in studio.
Yes, he's back with us. He's the creator of downloadradio.org, downloadmedia.org, which is, I guess, coming in the future. And he's CEO of York Systems, and he's even a former executive from Exodus and Boeing. He did a little work on the streaming media stuff in the early days of streaming media.
No, I had the largest corporate streaming media network back in 1997.
And we're going to talk a little bit about how that industry is evolving and changing here, and hopefully you'll stay with us for the whole show here.
Right? Absolutely. I'm here for the duration.
We're going to pick your brain a little bit about podcasting, and also we're going to talk a lot about the changes coming to the TV distribution industry. So,
well, and he can talk about that because he's now a filmmaker.
I'm actually a filmmaker.
That's exciting. Topics that we're also going to cover this week on the show. Peter?
Hollywood is again going after movie and TV BitTorrent downloaders.
Can current Hollywood production and distribution of TVs and movies survive this very high-speed era?
Firefox gets 25 million downloads.
And in the I'm not surprised at all category, Microsoft announces IE7.
We also got a listener email from Hennick, who does not like what Mitch Radcliffe had to say about Adam Curry and podcasting.
Well, let's jump into some news. I got worried when I got this email last week. This is a new lawsuit that we've seen lawsuits like this before. It's been filed on behalf of the four major television networks at CBS, NBC, Disney, which is ABC, 20th Century Fox, targeting people who are sharing programs or providing basically BitTorrent downloads of TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared because I'm not going to admit anything, but... Yeah. And it's interesting, the shows they mention, the four that they mention, and I guess there are others, CSI, Judging Amy, Las Vegas, and Boston Legal.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Which you're doing quite a bit of work with
Boston Legal. I do streaming, but, you know, that's not downloadable. But they're talking about BitTorrent now.
Mm-hmm. That is true. And I think that this is a fairly short list of TV shows that they're going after. I'm sure that the list is quite a bit longer. But there seems to be a lot of downloading going on right now of TV shows.
You know how much? 400,000 times a day. TV and movies, actually.
Yeah, and that's only going to grow. What do you think, Peter?
It's kind of like the Napster thing from the 90s.
You know what? I hate to say it, but here we go again.
Yeah, that's right. Haven't we done this one before?
We did it with music, with Napster. We did it with movies, with who knows?
I thought television would be immune because it's a free product anyway.
Well, you know, and I think what's different about television is that people really do think, because it's broadcast over the air, that it's essentially free. And the more tech savvy or aware listeners will know is that, you know, the whole Betamax case was about this. You know, this old Sony Betamax case was about your ability to record television shows in the mm-hmm. and when it wound through the U.S. courts, it finally said, yes, you do have a right to personally make a recording for your own personal use mm-hmm. of a particular television program. And it was the whole idea of time shifting a television show, because you either were, you know, out and about doing something else with your life other than sitting in front of the television.
But now we have huge hard drives, we have high speed internet access, and it's so much easier now, rather than to record it mm-hmm. on your VCR or whatever, you record it on your computer or download it. Actually, what I'm trying to say is download mm-hmm. it from a BitTorrent site.
Yeah.
Well, and the interesting thing is about 3 or 4 months earlier, there was a major peer-to-peer BitTorrent site that got busted for distributing movies and copyrighted music. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there were also TV files on there. But
is that Supernova?
No, it was another site.
There's a bunch of them out there that got shut down here.
But what's interesting about this, and I think this lawsuit is sort of the trial balloon, is that the U.S. Department of Justice did not go after the television shows that were also on this site. Mm-hmm. And that made me think, well, you know, maybe the U.S. government didn't want to wander into that topic, because people might, someone might go back and challenge and say, well, wait a minute, I thought I had a right to personal, you know, to personal use mm-hmm. copying mm-hmm. of television programs.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
I mean,
it's, well, it is different from music in a sense because people have been recording, you know, with VCRs for decades, it seems
like. Oh, absolutely.
Anyway. And so people have a different expectation than music.
Absolutely. No, and I remember copying TV shows on my VHS deck when they, you know, when they were the size of a desk, you know, in the, yeah. you know, in the early 80s. I mean, yeah. you know, come on.
But the sense is it's a copyrighted, it's like creation. It's like something that was created and it's copyrighted and it's owned by someone else. They do have the right, I can't believe I'm saying this, they do have the right to sell it to a foreign country to play mm-hmm. or make a DVD and sell it. Mm-hmm. And then we're kind of...
Yeah, it's a
diluting
whole
the pond.
Exactly. It's a whole distribution conflict of their established industry for distributing these content episodes, and they're making a huge amount of money off of these deals. And this is basically going around them, they want to cut it out.
Yeah, I love this quote from Dean Garfield. He's the director of the Motion Picture Association's anti-piracy campaign. Of course, the suit only names people as John Doe's or Joanna Doe's.
Oh, thank mm-hmm. you. My alias.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that one of your
It could
aliases?
Be any of us. Oh, no.
this quote is that part of the message here is that TV shows as well as movies are copyrighted and then distributing them and reproducing them without authorization of the copyright owners is illegal. I'm not so sure on this. I mean, I said, there is enough case law, and even recent case law, you know,
somebody needs to challenge this.
Well,
I think.
Even the TiVo and the Replay TV lawsuits, you know, they've won some of the motions that have been going on within those lawsuits that you know people do want to be able to, for example, you know, send a copy of a particular television show that they TiVo'd or replayed. So I mean, I understand where these guys are coming from, but. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I think this is just sort of round one, and you know, who knows what's going to happen. It's definitely a story to follow.
Well, yeah, and then you throw on the top of the pile here, people recording in their TiVos or in their little
replays
or whatever,
even the new Microsoft download video service.
Well, yeah, that or you know the portable media center. Those kind of things, but you can also throw in another piece to this pie too, which is Orb Networks, which is basically allowing you to stream your TV shows to any mobile device that you have.
Oh, sure.
So
is that copyright violating?
Is that,
I don't know.
You know, you're redistributing, but you're redistributing it to yourself.
It's just another television set, basically. That's probably okay.
Well, who knows?
You're not grabbing it and sharing it with others. It's like the distribution. It's
yeah, but what
but
if your neighbor picked
new
up
territory.
That Wi-Fi signal?
Yeah, well, yeah. Then that's not your fault. Well, I don't know. That's true.
I mean, we're in new territory here. There's no question.
No disrespect meant.
The motion picture industry and the TV industry is not adapting fast enough to keep up with the expectation of the consumer.
And I think that is the core thing to learn out of this loss is. What's that?
How did you characterize that before we started the show?
We talked a lot about this before.
Yeah, I have. Oh, okay. I can't remember now.
He just doesn't want to say it because I'll have to beep it anyway.
So. Right. No, but I think it does bring up this whole issue is that the recording industry, the motion picture industry, and now the television producers can't seem to wrap their heads around the fact that consumers want to be able to have an on-demand, time-shifted digital experience, clearly, you know, with these lawsuits, what they are saying is that no, we don't. I mean, I can't think of any other reason why they're doing it. Yeah. Saying no, we don't want you to have that experience. We don't want it. We want to, in fact, tell you how to consume our product. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's a nice segue into the next story.
Yeah. Well, I think also if you think about it, I think television content is going to be actually more contentious than movies. Because I think people are mad as hell and they're not going to take it anymore, I think was what's happening with television, is that they're sick and tired of being confined and when they can consume this content.
Well, before we get into the story, we're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about this discussion about the television industry and our opinion of it. Hang in there.
This is Web Talk Radio.
Tether off the sucker.
You're back with Web Talk Radio, webtalkradio.com. I'm Rob Greenlee. Danny Greenlee is in here with me, and we still have Peter York sitting here. And we're just about to get going back on the topic of television and the revolution that it's going to create for all of us.
Absolutely. Let the revolution begin, Rob.
That's right.
It's more tired. Like a runaway train, man.
I'm tired of being forced into a schedule of when I watch TV content.
Well, do you remember the this article says must-see TV Thursday nights in the 90s, and they made us, our whole lifestyle changed in America. We all were at home Thursday nights and watching certain things, but we don't do that anymore, do we?
No.
Well, we do, but that's only because we have to.
We don't have to anymore.
Well, legally.
I mean,
I have
not sat down and watched The West Wing on Wednesday nights ever this season because you just get it later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and you can download it, but some people don't always watch what's downloaded either. So, you know, that's the other piece of this too. Is just because you download it doesn't mean that somebody's going to watch it.
Yeah. So what we're doing is we're talking about an article that we all found from a guy named Brad Hill. It's called TV Trials. I'm sure Rob will provide the URL. But the gist of this article is really pretty amazing. I mean, it's a little bit of what we talked about is that, you know, these file sharing networks are now sort of eroding this whole concept of scheduling content. You know, and like Dana said, you know, there is no more must-see TV on Thursday night. It's Dana's TV when Dana wants to watch it or Rob wants to watch it.
Well, I think that this revolution is happening with radio, it's happening with TV, and it's happening with movies, a lesser extent movies, because movies has always been kind of a different type of distribution. So it isn't on a scheduled rotation like radio is and TV is. So people
And I got to tell you, I think one of the reasons why television is going to be different and why you're going to see a lot
of more popular
consumer pushback is that it's more than that. I mean, you know, Dana's a big Boston Legal fan, right? I mean, you know, she hangs out with a whole bunch of folks worldwide that are into Boston Legal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not talking thousands, we're probably talking tens or even potentially hundreds of thousands of people that are, you know, feel connected to a television show, and it's fact, you know, it's like a member of the family,
and
right?
Most of them actually don't get it in London.
Yeah,
in Japan,
they can't get it, and that's the bigger message here is that there's a lot of content that's being produced now that there's a lot of people around the world that can't get it to.
I guess that's sort of the dirty secret. In fact, the example I gave earlier before we went on air was the Battlestar Galactica, the new one that started. I don't know when they started production, but it only just started happening here in the U.S. on the Sci-Fi Channel in January of this year in 2005. But the season actually had wrapped up and the show was actually done, I want to say in November or December of last year. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Sky TV, Rupert Murdoch's company was actually airing all of the episodes before they even aired in the U.S.
And so airing them where? In Europe?
On Sky TV. Yeah,
in Europe.
On the satellite channel. So it's a satellite, like DirecTV here in the U.S.
So somebody captured that off of the satellite.
Off the satellite feed.
And put it online.
And put it online with BitTorrent. And oh, by the way, there were at least 10 episodes of the new Battlestar Galactica series that were available online before the first episode even aired on Sci-Fi Channel here in the U.S. Yeah, and so
Sci-Fi was dying, of course. They were like hating this.
I'm sure they were not happy about this, but you know, it goes to a bunch of different issues. I mean, clearly there were fans who believed that, you know, A, it shouldn't be withheld, and if you know, in the scheme of things, people wanted to watch this show, by God, they were going to go watch it because they were big Sci-Fi or Battlestar Galactica fans. But I think more importantly, it does begin to sort of take control back from the consumer to say, you know what? You can't tell me what to do, you know, with this content. You can't tell me how to watch it. You can't tell me how to interpret it. You can't tell me when to consume it.
Yeah.
You can't do any of these things.
And what channel to
tune or what in. Channel to be on, right? It's
or in what country you live in.
Yeah, I mean, it really becomes me TV, right? It's and in fact, it's a concept that we used to at the Boeing Company. We called it A-cubed. It stood for anywhere, anytime. Anywhere, and another one we called J-Cube was just in time, just enough, and just for me.
Yeah.
And J-Cube really applies to this.
Yeah.
So
just for me.
It,
That's nice.
Yeah, a phrase that really spells this out really clearly is the tyranny of scheduled TV. And I think that that's the big motivator behind this revolution. And I think it is going to be a huge revolution, even much more so than radio or movies. Television is actually, I mean, think about it. I think television has grown in its popularity much more rapidly than movies have. And I think it's because the content's more frequent. There's usually more content. So it almost seems like, I mean, if you look at the movie studios and you look at the major actors, it seems like the major movie actors are actually doing more television now than they are movies.
Right. And it used to be if you were a movie actor, you know, oh my God, doing television, you're like,
yeah, it was like lower on the food chain.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh my God, you know, it's like theater people that used to sort of turn their nose up at movies and television.
But now look at how many major stars, like, you know, even Boston Legal is a good example with James Spader. He spent most of his career in the movie side.
Absolutely.
But now he's spending all of his time here, and you got Candace Bergen, you got all these major movie actors coming to television.
And of course, Mr. Shatner.
Yeah.
These are TV people.
So in some ways it begs the question, you know, what is the long-term future of movies as a medium as well?
Well, and that's probably a topic for a whole different show. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, what it costs to make a movie and what it costs you to go to the movie, there seems to be a huge disconnect. And, you know, you hear this complaint from consumers more and more. I think that, you know, the other thing about television, and this is the other part of television, is that, you know, the television product was designed to never be removed from its exhibition schedule and not from its interrupt-driven format.
The commercials, right?
So what's the first thing people did when they got their TiVo? They hit that 30-second
delete forward button.
Yeah, right? You know? Yeah. And then, the more sophisticated people said, you know what? Rob, I just saw this great show, and by the way, here's a DVD of this show, and I took the commercials out for you, and you're like, oh, thanks, you know, thanks, man, that's cool.
Well, actually, most of the TV shows that are downloaded off of BitTorrent don't have commercials in them for some reason.
No, they don't. I'm really surprised that the TV producers are not wrapping their heads around this. I mean, I'll give you a great example. So Dick Wolf, who's the producer of all the Law and Order TV shows, you know, he's got three right now, right, and he's got a fourth one coming up now. He gets approximately about $1 million an episode for NBC to air it on the NBC channel. Mm-hmm. But then he's also made two other deals, and I think it's like 7 days later, the Turner Network, TNT, can then play that same episode 7 days after its original air date. And then I think USA Networks, which is the old Barry Diller stuff, allows you to get it. I think they get it like 12 or 14 days after air date. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here you are getting $3 million an episode, right, for a show that you, I don't know, maybe, you know, I don't know what it cost him, but maybe let's say it cost $500,000 an episode, right? That's a lot of money. I can't believe that the producers are still hanging on to that old broadcast model. You know, if they really began to embrace this whole idea of embracing this online audience, like Dana, they could in fact make even more money at this, right? I mean, you know, I was just in Costco the other day, and I saw that they had Charmed season one episodes for about $30. Yeah. And I thought, okay, $30 doesn't sound like a bad price point, right? You know, instead of getting it on a DVD, you get it as a downloadable experience. Well, imagine if you had, I don't know, a million people, you know, pay $30 a year to watch that. I mean, that's
a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
You're saying download it. You know,
download, right?
Sure.
And they get the show, you know, at the same time or in a time shifted period, whatever the terms and conditions are. Is that, you know, I could certainly see people being able to do that.
Well, is companies like CinemaNow?
Yeah, I was going to say it's done.
Movie Link, all those kind of guys, are they looking at television as a possible content
source? You know,
source?
I think that they are. I think the issue still comes back to actually a couple of things. So first of all, that people are getting used to doing TiVo and replay. of their content and their programming, mm-hmm. right? So that so that they are in essence with these legal tools, not using things like BitTorrent, like in our previous story, are in fact time shifting their content. Mm-hmm. And so I think this article brings up an interesting point, is that there may be several shows that you want to watch during the week that are all on at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And exactly.
What the networks wanted you to do is to, quote, become, a Nielsen viewer of a yeah. particular program or a particular network.
Yeah.
And what TiVo has really done in Replay is really kind of shatter that entire model and the demographics. And in fact, I would really seriously question a lot of the Nielsen rating data now. If you were a producer of a show, right, because it's all about ratings, right, because ratings drives what you get, what you charge for the advertising.
Yeah.
That there in fact is probably a much larger audience of people for these particular shows than Nielsen actually captures.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. That are downloading. I mean, especially if you look at the shows that are very popular in the download distribution.
Yeah, Battlestar Galactica is a great one. I think that's the number one BitTorrent downloaded television show. And they're only on there about their fourth or fifth episode airing on the Sci-Fi Channel here
exactly.
in the United States.
So they're behind. Yeah,
they're way behind. And, season's over now.
And the other big one I've noticed looking at these distribution networks is there's a lot of seeds for Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, Desperate Housewives is apparently another
huge one.
This one, if more people watch Desperate Housewives on TV, they would stay around for Boston Legal. Now, I'd like to actually see that happen. Anyway.
Well, Boston Legal is pretty popular in a download,
drops,
too.
Man. Of course, anything would drop after DH.
Yeah.
I had to get in the word Boston Legal one more time.
I understand. No, I'm with you. But I think that this whole thing of, two shows on at one time is another problem, right?
And then trying to capture those, because I mean, a lot of the tools that are out there can't get beyond actually even two shows. I mean, most of the TVs only have
one tuner
or maybe two tuners.
Yeah. But, we watch Alias and we record West Wing
so that's a good example. Example here in the States, right?
Yeah, or we use one of our PCs that has a TV tuner in it to record a show. So we've got various ways of recording.
Although Download has HDTV version.
Well,
it looks so good.
That's the other piece too, is the quality that it seems like is available off of these download distribution is better than what you can record off of your own
PVR. It is getting better, and I guess that's the other issue is that your local
– the file sizes aren't that big because of DivX.
Well, think of it. Your local TV affiliate, right, who gets that particular show and obviously broadcasts it in your local market has a certain transmitter and a certain set of quality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just get the signal get, right?
ABC is horrible in the Seattle area.
Right.
Tacoma, Seattle. Right.
Yeah, as far as picture quality.
It's horrible. And I do all my screen captures from
right.
the TV,
and
so it's
and,
not
and
working.
And I think even the HD channels aren't going to solve it. Clearly it's a digital signal. It's ones and zeros being broadcast over the air, but it still has, issues related to quality. So why can't you get the highest quality download that you can possibly get? Because in essence, if you continue on with this existing television model, there's a lot of things that you're not getting in terms of the quality. So, are you cheated as a consumer if you didn't get, a better sound or picture quality watching your Boston Legal episodes? I mean, that's a legitimate gripe from the consumer, and there is no alternate or remedy for you as the consumer other than to download. And so I think that there's a lot of issues surrounding this whole idea of downloading television and breaking the existing television model that the consumer is beginning to say, time out. This is not an acceptable model anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how the television producers are going to wrap their heads around this one yet.
Yeah. I mean,
they need to hire you as a consultant.
There's
that would be cool. I'm available.
Some significant breakage in the current infrastructure that the TV industry has on there for their distribution and things, just like we talked about, that it's going to put some companies out of business. And that's what we're up against, I think, for these companies and the industry to make this transition. Just like the music industry, they had the labels that were – they had a lot to lose because they weren't going to necessarily be the only distribution point for the content, and they were going to lose revenue from that. But the other aspect of this too is it's still difficult for people to get these TV shows, even through BitTorrent. And oftentimes, like we talked about, the quality sometimes isn't very good. It takes a lot of technical knowledge. So what the movie industry is and TV industry is doing is forcing consumers to pay for this, but in ways that isn't dollars and cents. It's they're paying for it in their time and effort.
Right, absolutely.
And if the consumer can convert that time and effort into more convenient ways of getting this, they may be willing to pay for it. And just like the conversion of convenience.
Absolutely. No, I think that price point that I saw for the Charmed first season in Costco was a great example. I mean, you know, what do you think is the – and this is sort of when you guys had me on the show last time. This is, goes back to what do you think is the reasonable price point for a song or a movie mm-hmm. or now a TV show, you know? And is $30 a year for 22 episodes an adequate price point? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems like it's a pretty reasonable price point, you know, considering what the cable company charges me every month mm-hmm. for my cable. So
99 cents per episode sounds good to me, just like a movie, right?
Could be.
or a music file.
Music file. Yeah. Probably a little bit more. I mean, I
$2.
Yeah, I mean, even no, I think
$1.99. Yeah, it's on sale.
Yeah, it's on sale. But no, in all honesty, I mean, obviously here again, right? The more popular a show is, the more viewers there are, the higher the price point, right?
Yep.
So you know, and that can be set, you know, by the content producer. So now I think about you know, and I think about the guys that you know who crank out this kind of programming all the time, like the Dick Wolfs of Law and Order and the Jerry Bruckheimers with the CSI series. Those guys probably have a great opportunity to add to that additional revenue stream that they get. And as I said, I think it's absolutely brilliant that somebody like a Dick Wolf can get $3 million an episode from three different television networks. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, what's another $20 million in your pocket,
that's
Dick,
a thing,
right?
Well, that sounds like a pretty good scam to me.
It's a great scam.
Well, are they worried about diluting the syndication of it by selling it?
Well, obviously the networks aren't too concerned about it because they're still paying the $1 million per episode.
I was thinking of content.
No, and even if there is dilution, I mean, think about it, right? I mean, television shows come out on DVD anyway, and depending upon their popularity.
Some are. A lot don't, though.
Yeah, a lot don't. But that's probably has to do with the terms and conditions with the actors and the producers more than anything else.
David E. Kelly has never put out any of his wonderful shows
on
DVD, and I just wondered because he's saving them for syndication.
Well, I'm sure that's part of it.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
But what were you going to say?
Oh, I was thinking of something else. I definitely think that, you know, I mean, I understand, you know, that people want to get paid, right? I mean, but at the, you know, what point do you decide, you know what, look, like getting $3 million for every Law & Order episode. I think it's clever, and I think it's great that he's able to do that. But, you know, at the end of the day, for example, do the actors get residuals on every single episode and all those distribution points? I'm assuming they do, but mm-hmm. but you know in fact I remember that you know broadcast residuals to actors was at a higher rate than it was to cable, right? And mm-hmm. I remember the actors recently said, yeah, but now that you know they did that because cable was an emerging technology, right? It was an emerging distribution mechanism. Well, now it's ubiquitous, right? I mean, of us that live here in the Northwest, because we have such crappy broadcast,
the mountains.
Yeah, and there are mountains. There are obviously geographical issues related to it. But because we live, you know, in a place that has lots of hills, that broadcast signal that would normally come over the air, we get via the cable because it's actually, in fact, better, right? And it may be our only way to get this particular programming is through mm-hmm. the cable TV
connection.
And
we have to pay for that.
And we have to pay for that. We have to pay exorbitant amounts of money for it.
Exactly. And also, I think that the other major thing that we're going to see change, I think, with downloading of episodes like this, TV shows, is that I think television broadcasting is not going to go away, but it's going to evolve into a different model. And I think it's going to be real similar to what we're going to see happen with radio as well, where broadcast shines with current events, and it shines with content that's more up-to-date, more current, news, weather, sports, all that kind of stuff that people want to get a live feed on. But I think the episodes and the dramas and the sitcoms and all those type of content feeds are going to eventually come as a download. And the industry just needs to support that.
Well, so here's an ironic thing. I don't know if you remember, but I actually went to the 1995 Bill Gates keynote address at Comdex. You guys have gone to Comdex often enough. But in 1995, one of the – you know, Bill always does these kind of futuristic vignettes of things, you know, obviously, you know, being driven by Microsoft technology. But I find it funny that in 1995 – and this was by the way, happened to be the year that he didn't talk about the internet, right? And that was, you know, later on in the month is when, you know, Microsoft made this titanic shift to go to the internet. But the whole topic was one of the topics within this 1995 presentation was about on-demand television. And then in fact they had like on-demand episodes of Oprah. They had some on-demand episodes of, I think, of some currently popular television programs. And so I think it's funny that even 10 years later, 10 years later, I give Gates a little credit for, you know, kind of pushing the envelope on the vision, because it was obviously all mocked up. Yeah. But you know, the fact that people have been talking about the ability and the desire to do this for over 10 years really should be a wake up call to the broadcasters and the television producers. Say, look, you know, this isn't a new phenomenon. We've just had some better tools to do it today than we did 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. Well, in Comcast, some of the big cable providers are offering television on demand, but the problem is that it's too limiting. It doesn't have necessarily a great collection of TV programming. It actually has very little TV programming. Most of it is movies.
Most of it is movies, right?
And so it doesn't give you access to worldwide content. And that's really, I think, what's the bigger opportunity, I think, for the movie industry or the TV industry is to reach a global audience with this content and monetize it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that brings up, you know, that whole Battlestar Galactica is that, you know, people in Europe were able to watch, you know, the 10 plus episodes long before people in the U.S. And in fact, there are other programs. I think one of the shows you were talking about earlier, Dana, to me was a show called Pasadena. It only had 3 episodes here in the U.S., but there was an Australian television production company that said, no, we'll pay for the rest of the episodes
they were all produced in the U.S.
Oh, they
all were canceled after 3.
Oh, so there were but only 3 aired episodes, but they had this thing.
And people were desperate for how did it end.
Yeah, exactly.
So now you can go get the Australian version who aired the whole 13 episodes.
And so I guess that opens up this other whole issue is that, you know, once again, how do you track, right? And this is the same problem we were talking about podcasting, right? How do you track this stuff? You know, what is the actual audience demographic? And in fact, in the case of downloading of television shows, there is a huge set of metrics that aren't being captured, right? Mm-hmm. That, oh, by the way, there is this much larger audience. And in fact, you know, this would be sort of, if you ever have anyone from Nielsen on, is to ask them sort of pointed questions and say, you know, what is the sort of fudge factor, you know, or the margin of error in the Nielsen ratings, right? Is it, you know, is it 5%? Is it 2%? Is it 10%? I mean, who knows, right?
Well, it's certainly not tracking 400,000 downloads a day.
Right,
on
absolutely.
The network.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
I mean, you start extrapolating that out over a year and you've got significant movement happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, if you think about it, right, just pick on one TV show, right? That could be, you know, it could be 400,000 people watching a Boston Legal or, you know, or one of these other shows that got mentioned.
Especially over the whole season.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, that I think opens up this very interesting dialogue that needs to happen about, you know, what is the nature of this television content, right? You know, what, you know, how does it get tracked? How does it get monetized? I mean, clearly, I mean, these people, you know, and production costs are not, you know, they're not free, right? I mean, actors, you know, cast and crew, the producers, the writers, I mean, everyone has to be paid.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, the question comes down to
except
is...
Except for the PAs. They never get paid.
Yeah, the production assistants. Yeah, are you one of those lowly production assistants? Did you work
I think
on,
you are.
No. No, I'm actually directing movies right now.
Yeah, they call them interns at college.
Right, they're interns. Right.
Interns, yeah.
But, no, I definitely think that that you're going to see a very titanic shift in this model and that this whole idea of suing the consumer who wants their product, they just want it in a different fashion. They don't want it bound to their schedule. They want it when they want it. They don't want commercials.
All the TV industry is doing is buying themselves some time to figure this out, supposedly. Yeah. And I hope that they're investing that time in actually
listening
making some effort in adapting their industry to fit this.
I hope so, because if they don't, you know, independent film and television producers will do an end run around these guys.
Well, yeah, or it's going to take down a lot of the TV studios down there because – the advertisers aren't going to get a return on their investment anymore.
Right. And why should they? I mean, you know, the one thing I think that is sort of encouraging is I remember seeing a 60 Minutes interview a couple of years ago with Dick Wolf, the producer of Law & Order, and Dick was pointing at a pop machine, a soda pop machine. And he said, you know, for you know, whatever the price point is, he says, could it be $100,000, it could be $200,000. He says, I can make that machine a Coke or a Pepsi machine. Mm-hmm. And that sort of, you know, opens up the box is that there's absolutely no reason why, oh, by the way, if you were showing that Law & Order in France, it couldn't be a Fanta, you know, or some other, like Orangina. It's a good example, right? That's a very popular soft drink in France. Mm-hmm. It could be an Orangina machine.
Rebranded. Is what
you could rebrand it. You
have such an eclectic knowledge, man.
You like
Orangina,
that?
Orangina, yeah, I like that. Okay.
Orangina, yeah, that's cool. That's
so good. You have different flavors of the same show potentially.
Absolutely, right?
So they could have duplicate revenue streams.
Well, think about it, right? You've got to dub the show in French anyway, right?
Yeah,
for French distribution. But there's no reason why you can't have French.
No, damn it. If you're going to download it off the internet, it has to be English. And
right.
You have to know English.
Yeah, no, I mean, no. You know, but no, but it does make you think that there, you know, there are some opportunities. But anyway, you know, Dick, his whole point of that discussion was that he is thinking about things like, for example, product placement that's very common in the movies. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no reason why these guys couldn't shift from a commercial model to a product placement model.
Yeah, especially with products that have worldwide distribution.
Yes,
I
absolutely.
Know that's one of the big issues that even Web Talk Radio has is that we reach a worldwide audience. So any advertiser that comes into the mix, I'm looking at it going, okay, are you selling things on a worldwide basis? And you know that's one of the criteria that I look at because it could dictate whether or not an advertiser has success.
She says as she sips her Starbucks coffee as she talks
on
the radio.
Yeah, yes, that's right. That's
yeah,
right.
It doesn't have to be doesn't have to be kind of over the top like the Truman Show, right? But you know,
why the hell not?
No. But I certainly think that there
parody man.
But I certainly think that there is enough opportunity there to do that. I mean, I laugh. About what was that company that the Seinfeld guys used to talk about? J.P. Peterman or whatever.
It was a catalog company.
It was a catalog. Yeah, I mean, you know, and that guy got lots of free advertising.
Oh, he did.
You know, but
or George Steinbrenner. You know, they had that whole New York Yankee thing in there all the time.
Too. I think there's certainly an opportunity here. Yeah. So
and Denny Crane
or cigars.
Yeah. So if you're a Jerry Bruckheimer or a David E. Kelly or a Dick Wolf, give us a call. We got lots of ideas.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's
is our audience still with us?
Yeah, I hope so.
30 minutes of TV talk.
Well, let's wrap up this segment by talking about Firefox. They've basically announced that they've reached 25 million downloads.
Speaking
I'd say that's a significant development.
Okay, for those who don't know what Firefox is,
it's a browser.
It's a browser.
Alternative web browser that's based on an open source development process through the Mozilla Foundation.
Right. So it's actually Netscape in some new.
Well, yeah.
In a new garment.
It actually is driven by the Mozilla browser. It just has a new kind of look and feel to it. That's what the Firefox browser is.
Any one of the developers like some punk 18-year-old kid?
Yeah. Well, they're all punks when they're 18, right?
No, I know.
This one also, and it's like a tab.
No, but I mean, I think he's like, oh, I want to take Microsoft down.
That's right. You know? Well, of course. I mean, you would expect that. And then, not surprisingly, also it's kind of thrown into the mix here. Microsoft announced this week that they're going to upgrade their browser finally, and it seemed to coincide pretty closely with Firefox announcing their 25 million download level.
Yeah,
what do you think? Is
you know? By the way, I've converted, or actually almost completely over to Foxfire right now. So
Firefox.
I mean Firefox rather. No,
that was a TV show.
Yeah, so it's,
yeah,
well,
I know it was a TV show.
Well, a movie, I think.
Yeah, or a movie.
Jan Michael.
But no, I think I've been using it for about the last, I don't know, last 4 or 5 months now.
It's actually a pretty good browser.
I like it, but I got to tell you, I got one thing I don't like. And this, and I have to put my finger at Dana, is that there are some sites out on the internet that don't write their HTML to support all browsers. And
yeah,
specifically, they make their sites all specifically IE and IE only. And in fact, they come up with little boxes that do browser detects and tell you that you can't even go to this site unless you're using the IE browser. And I hate those sites, and I hate the people that do that.
Well, the Opera browser went through a lot of that.
I know. No, and it's ridiculous.
With MSN, of all places.
Well, and it's so dumb because I remember a time, and this would have been, you know, circa, I don't know, 1990.
Back in the dark ages.
1997, 1998, where most people that were developing large-scale sites would obviously try them in different flavors of browser. Mm-hmm. The fact that we now have sites that are IE specific, I think is really, really bad. So mm-hmm. I know Dana does that.
Change.
So Dana, I want you to be a little more
spank me.
Little W3C HTML compliant and not make it only specifically IE.
I'm a lazy web developer.
This Microsoft announcement that Bill Gates made at I think it was the RSA event this past week says that the upgrade will be available in the summer, this coming summer. But what was interesting about the announcement is it did not say that they were planning on enhancing any features in the upgrade in the browser. And all it talked about was security in the announcement and how that they were going to make the browser much more secure.
That's
and I'm
one.
Like saying, talk about missing the point. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, they need to make the browser secure.
Well, they do, but everybody's clamoring for upgrades to the features.
Yeah.
Not for security, but security is a big part of it.
And I would have thought they would have had, like, for example, some more integrated RSS support.
Yeah, well, tabs. Because
Gates, you know, loves RSS now, right?
That's maybe all coming out with Longhorn, which keeps getting
pushed or something. That's actually what they were going to originally do, is that they were going to come out with a new browser when Longhorn came out.
Right.
And all this pressure that's come down, you know, I've even talked to Robert Scoble about this up at Microsoft, and he's been telling me for months that they've been working on a new version of the IE browser. But he didn't think it was going to come out until Longhorn came out. And that was the message.
Well, I think that probably was the product strategy at that point, right?
That's been coming out. That's a message that's been coming out of Microsoft for a long time. But this
Longhorn's a new OS, by the way, anybody who hasn't listened.
But this upgrade has, I think, really been pushed because of all of the feedback that Microsoft's been getting, as well as the success of Opera and Firefox. I mean, there's no question.
Absolutely. And I think that obviously the folks on the IE team, the IE product team, probably have seen, I mean, with 25 million downloads, that's a huge erosion of the browser market, right? So that young guy, you didn't have that. Did you have that guy on your show or not?
Who's that?
We had the CEO of
Mozilla.
Oh, you said
the CEO. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
She was all corporate.
But that lead developer.
She was not a punk.
Yeah, that 18-year-old punk kid.
He was on the cover of Wired Magazine, I think it was.
Okay,
last month.
Okay. No, I mean, I got to tell you.
This month.
You know, giving this, in fact, this actually segues back into what we were just talking about with television, right? Not to bring television up. But it's really what the consumer wants, right? I mean, these applications need to be, you know, developed and catered to what the consumer wants. Because if you don't, you know, you're left in the dust. And so, I mean, I applaud Microsoft for doing the security updates. They need to do that. And, oh, by the way, you know, they just bought another security virus company. So look to hopefully to see some kind of automated maybe virus protection built into your Longhorn operating system through that acquisition. But
what does that say about their development team that can't develop these security things?
Well, you know, I think that Microsoft has gotten into the sort of large company mentality now, yeah. where it's not only does that one hand doesn't know what the other one is doing, but in many cases it's one finger doesn't know what the other one is doing, or yeah. that there's another hand.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think that's how it's mm-hmm. it's the natural evolution of large companies. You know,
they are a large company.
Yeah, Microsoft yeah. is no longer a startup. Hasn't been for a long time, and so a lot of what you see now is just the usual corporate lack of you know integration within a company.
Mm-hmm. You've seen that a lot. You saw it at Boeing, I'm sure, when you were at Boeing.
I saw it at Boeing. I mean, I saw it at, you know, at other small companies. I mean, it's the thing that happens, you know, that's evolutionary in large scale organizations. And mm-hmm. so that's something you just know. I mean, you know, I think about guys like Jack Welch, you know, of GE. I mean, he tried to break down a lot of those barriers, but those barriers go up, you know, for whatever set of reasons. And so I think Microsoft is just, you know, doing their own sort of, you know, maturity and growing pains.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there was one other thing that I heard online here this week. It was from the demo conference that everybody's at right now. Is that
are you mad that you're not at the demo conference right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I'm furious. No. Actually, I can get there virtually. So anyway, there was some discussion down there about Apple having this big walled garden around them of secrecy on everything that they're doing. And you contrast that to what Microsoft is doing right now with having 180 bloggers or 1,800 bloggers or whatever the number is, and Robert Scoble and having Channel 9 and streaming video conversations with different developers up there. It's such a clash of culture up there, and that was one of the big things that came out of some of the discussion at Demo that really kind of jumped out at me, is that I hadn't really thought about how secretive Apple is and how it's creating almost an environment where Microsoft isn't viewed as much as an evil empire anymore, it seems like. I mean, people have really, it seems like anyway, have backed off on bashing Microsoft.
Yeah, they're not the evil empire. They're just as dumb as every other big company.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think people have just accepted what Microsoft is, and they don't have this unrealistic expectation for what it is.
Yeah, like Gates sits in a basement, you know, with these machinations of, you know, of evil intent, right?
Yeah, and plus they've kind of virtually opened the doors, you know, and said, you know, come look inside. Give us feedback. Tell us what we need to be doing better. But that is in stark contrast to what we're seeing out of Apple right now. So anyway.
It's okay to shift. You know, I almost liken the bashers as bullies. You know, they've targeted one poor little kid for a while with the glasses. Now they're moving on to another one.
Well, I think, frankly, Apple may be the next one on the rung of bashing going on.
Yeah, I thought
on.
They were the cool ones. Hey, can we get into snarky email?
Okay.
I love this one. Can I please read it?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is a letter we got from Hank. And Hank, I don't think is, well, we'll just, he listened to last week's show.
We don't know where he's from, or who he is, or anything.
I don't think he's English speaking because of something he said here. But Hank, you listened to Mitch Radcliffe, who was on our show last week. And everybody, it's still up there on the website. Go listen to it. Mitch was talking about podcasting, Rob and Mitch. And there was an article in the Seattle Times. And Rob was interviewed for that article. And it covered Adam Curry, who is sort of the pseudo-pioneer of the this movement.
Well, actually, it was in the USA Today. It was a national article in the USA Today.
Right. Oh, yeah. USA Today. Okay. Thank you. Okay, Hank, you said, I listened to your show today, and I could not believe that Mitch was so immature about Adam Curry and podcasting, unlike Mitch, who just wants to make money and screw everyone else in the process.
Oh, yeah, that's
Adam
Mitch.
At least encourages people to be creative, unlike the whiny, jealous baby, arrogant, rational baby. I'm being generous. This is where I think he means irrational, right? Okay, not rational.
No, I wouldn't say Mitch is very irrational. He's pretty rational.
Just drop him altogether from the show. That would help rid an annoying nag.
Yeah, but Mitch is what makes this show interesting to listen to, and thank you for writing us about him.
Because I'm not making fun of you, but he's not going anywhere. The guy's far too entertaining.
Well, he's been with us for almost 6 years, so and he brings a lot of insight to what's going on, especially in digital media. And I think his viewpoints I a little bit concur with, and I think there's a lot of podcasters that concur with a lot of what Mitch said, but they're not as free in how they think of it to come out and actually say some of those things.
Yeah, that's, you know, there does seem to be the, I'm just going to call it some cowardly people within the podcasting space. And I, the reason I bring this up is because you and I were went to that podcasting dinner and it was recorded, and the guy who was recording it, you know, basically said, "Look, we're going to record this thing and we'll podcast it later." And in fact, he edited it down and put it out. And of course, I put it up on Download Radio, and you know, I don't know if you were getting ready to put it out or not.
No,
DownloadRadio.org
site. But then I get this panicked email from the guy who recorded. And he's like, "Take it down."
Oh, really?
Yeah. One of the people complained.
One of the podcasters.
One of the podcasters complained that they didn't know that it was going to be podcast. But you know, Rob and I were there. And we're like going, well. I mean, yeah, there was
a lot of stuff said that I could see that they wouldn't want out.
That USA Today reporter was that.
But yeah, and so,
he was.
Wasn't he taking notes, man?
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
but the USA Today reporter, he didn't talk about a lot of the stuff.
No, he didn't. In fact, he didn't get into any of the more controversial parts of the discussion that we were really having.
I mean, he was putting together a fluff piece.
I thought to myself, my gosh, you know, here we are having a conversation. There's a USA reporter there today, and to be honest, the guy who was doing the recording was very upfront about it. It wasn't covert or surreptitious in any way.
Was that who was that? That was
Tim Berkman.
Oh, Tim Berkman. Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah. But no. But I got to tell you, it really bugged me that the podcasters. You know, I don't know what it is, but they seem to be, you know, kind of hemming and hawing about Saint Adam. I give Adam a lot of credit for doing the podcasting thing.
I mean,
thing
he and, has a lot of influence out there.
Absolutely.
And there's no question. A lot of people are wanting to stay on his good side.
He's got that DJ hair still.
But these topics need to be talked about.
That's
the bigger message that I posted on my blog in support of what Mitch was saying, because Mitch is the brave one that actually came out and was talking about it. Now, he was a little bit harsh on Adam, I have to admit. Adam is a pretty positive guy overall, and I think he's done tremendous work in the podcasting area.
You're not being all fluff now, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm just being fair to him that he's done a lot of work to help propel this whole movement forward.
You know what my main gripe with Adam is? He's hogging all the PR.
Well, he is. And,
there's
probably a little bit of jealousy that comes up with that. But I think that the bigger message is that, unfortunately, the message that's gotten out through the media has been so generic and so the same. It's like, talk about staying on message, you know? That's what the whole media has done with podcasting.
And it's so weird because, you know, every article we come out, you know, that comes out about podcasting, it's the same old rehash. And in fact,
everything.
And you talked about that in your blog post, is that, you know, it was like, ho-hum, another, you know, blah, 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 podcast. Invented by Adam Curry, blah, 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 Drew and Don, blah, blah, blah.
David Weiner was one of the partners in developing podcasts with Adam. He actually posted that in his blog. He said he referred to an article and said, well, there's another podcasting article that came out talking about all the same BS.
Right.
You know, and it's like he even feels that way.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the issues that I brought up in my blog about podcasting, you know, are – I think, you know, nobody wants to even talk about it. It's like, for example, one of my major pushes is that people actually add metadata to their podcasts. And in fact, you know, I'm not requiring you, but I'm certainly trying to encourage you to add a little metadata. Like, you know,
you've got to search the text,
give the title of the show, put the author in.
Well, and also have
a summary description.
Well, and have a good file name.
Sure. I mean, these are all kind of good file housekeeping things that, you know, you ought to do anyway.
Well, it's also usability too, because when a person downloads that, oftentimes that's all they see is the file name.
Right, but I can't even get an intelligent discussion on that topic because there's all this other nonsense going on.
There's a lot of content producers that don't understand even what metadata is.
Oh, absolutely.
And how to get it in there, that's a whole other story.
Yep.
It's like, you know.
But it's not that hard.
No, it's not hard.
No, and
it's
make it easier with downloadradio.org.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have a really nice template. And everything.
Yeah.
I just wanted to quickly get to one other email we got from Scott. He wrote us, hey, you guys like the show, but could you please, please talk a little bit about Macintosh? There's so much on the Mac that integrates with the web, like .Mac. Just a suggestion. A subscriber, Scott. well, we kind of gave you what you wanted, but I don't know if it was so good. The walled garden comment.
We talked a little bit about Apple, yeah.
But we should. We don't ever do – we do tons of shows about Windows-based products and stuff.
Yeah, but we're not necessarily a product show. So that's the other conflict here.
But we don't ever talk about the – I don't know, the culture of Apple or anything, do we?
We've had guests on to talk about culture.
He just asked him for a little bit more.
Yeah, and listen, we've been talking about podcasting. I mean, who do you think makes the
– That's an iPod solution.
I mean,
right?
Come on. Yeah. I mean, yes, I know that people – I mean, clearly people on a PC can use it. But, the popularity of podcasting in the iPod was driven by the Macintosh users. And, yes, I absolutely embrace the Macintosh and Macintosh users for that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Scott, write us and tell us what you'd like to hear specifically. Yeah. Because, frankly, we're kind of like a PC house. So it's hard for us to really focus on
– I know. That's sacrilege, isn't it?
It's not intentional. It's just sort of like what's in front of your face.
Hey, so you want to find some good Macintosh QuickTime content? HiddenFrontier.com.
There you go.
Goodness,
that's right.
We were looking at HiddenFrontier.
Star Trek. Hidden Frontier.
Yeah, so we have there's a site, HiddenFrontier.com, that has got, I think they've been doing it for the last 6 years, of alternate Star Trek episodes sort of in the Star Trek genre. But they've got all new storylines, all new characters, and they've even invented some new races Star Trek universe.
Television shows. These are video television
shows. Yeah, and it's, I'm not too crazy about the acting, but they do some great computer-generated effects.
CGI stuff is really good.
In fact, I was telling Rob and Dana when I was showing them to the computer-generated graphics on this show is actually better than Babylon 5.
Has a much bigger budget.
Who had probably a much, much bigger budget, right? I'm sure these are – I don't know what it cost them to do per episode. But,
and to hark back to our whole BitTorrent thing, you were saying why hasn't the Gene Roddenberry people or the Paramount people sued these people?
Well, because I think that they're running it as a fan site, and I think that Paramount – wisely believes that, what Star Trek fans are like. I mean, some of them can be a little nutty.
Well, especially now that there is no new content being produced.
Enterprise. Yeah. Right. They canceled Enterprise. But no, I mean, but there is, in fact, clearly a fan base. And speaking once again about fan bases, right? The Star Trek fan base is huge, right? And it covers a gigantic demographic. I mean, I don't care if you're 60 years old or 10 years old.
And geographic.
And geographic worldwide, absolutely.
The universe.
the entire Star Trek universe. Right?
The whole solar system.
Yeah, at least this tiny little speck of planet we call Earth.
Exactly.
But I definitely think that, Paramount probably wisely decided that, they didn't want to mess with these guys. And in fact, at the bottom of the site, they put in this disclaimer, that they're not trying to do, quote, copyright infringement.
Well, they're creating original content.
They're creating original content based
on – So the only really conflict that they have it would be trademark.
They use the name Star Trek.
Yeah,
they use
Star Trek, and they do use the typeface that has been used in the current series of shows.
And those spaceships that are just gorgeous, they do look a little familiar.
Yeah, they are a little familiar.
So that would be really where the legal conflict would be. And if Paramount's not necessarily worried about that, then it's probably not a big issue to them.
I think, I said we're not Paramount executives, so we don't know what's going on with it. But
we're mystified with the whole television industry.
But, the fact that they haven't sued these guys and are working cooperatively says something that perhaps some of the television and movie production companies are beginning to wrap their heads around this idea of embracing the fans. Because clearly, without the fans, there'd be no show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well, Peter, thanks for joining us on the show again. It's great to have you in here.
Absolutely.
Quickly tell us where we can find new information about Peter. You're working on a film.
Oh, sure. You can go to my blog, peteryork.net, which is spelled PETERYORKE.net. That's York with an E. Of course, I've got Download Radio and then Seattle Wireless TV. So
The URL for Seattle Wireless
is tv.seattlewireless.net.
That's all the time we have for Web Talk Radio this week. On behalf of Rob and myself, thanks for listening, and we'll see you round the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.